matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats,
spazzle,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now,
welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host, and as always, I hope you guys had a wonderful weekend and are getting ready for the week to come. So, once again, another week of my voice being one octave lower and me not feeling well. So, I don't know, man. Last week, when I came on here, I was like, yeah, I wasn't feeling well. I think I even had to run off the recording because I started sneezing. I was like, all right, I'm going to do what I got to do. And I'm going to be ready, feeling good and all sorts of stuff for the following week. I did not expect this, sickness to still be hanging around a week later. And although I am not contagious, according to the doctor, this just doesn't feel good. Like, I don't even know what to say. I'm actually ashamed of myself. And because I'm not feeling the best, I'm not going to be going into all the preliminaries and all this other stuff. I apologize again for those who were sitting at the edge of your seats waiting for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week. But this week, the womp womp goes to me. I'm giving myself the womp womp. I don't think I've ever done this in the history of According to RP. So those of you who are tuning in, this is the first time. This is an epic moment in According to RP history. I don't even think Charlemagne the God ever gave himself Donkey of the Day. So I am the womp womp of this week because you know what? I should have known better and I should have done more. I should have done more to ensure that I would not still be at this place of not feeling good. And I felt like I was making so much progress this week. You know, my people who've been checking in on me, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing so much better. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm drinking this, I'm drinking that. But I think the problem is that there was a lot of stuff going on this week. I was in the streets, and although I felt like I was doing so much better, I should have left my ass at home. I should have kept still. I should not have been in these streets. So Friday, this past Friday, the Gentleman's Factory had another epic event. Those of you who've tuned in, I haven't had Jeff on the show yet, which probably is a shame, but whatever. I'll have him at some point. But Jeff and I are really good friends, and so I'm always there to support whatever it is that he does. Now, I will say that my spidey senses were tingling, and my gut was like in active mode. And I had a point of the day on Friday because I got dressed. You know, I put on a nice little dress. You know, I made sure that I was presentable. One thing, whenever I don't feel well, I do put a little extra effort in my appearance because I can't walk around looking like the Walking Dead. So that's why people are always confused when they're like, you said you don't feel well, but you look so good. I'm like, well, I mean, one, praise God. But two, I can't be in the street looking how I feel either. So I actually had texted Jeff and was like, listen, let me know how it goes. This sounds like it might be amazing. Congratulations again, all the effort. You know, we'll debrief on Saturday. And so he texts back, you're going to be there. Like, you're going to be there. I will see you. No excuses. At the time, it's not like I didn't feel like I shouldn't go. Something in my mind was just like, eh. One, and also, like, in all transparency, I don't like crowds. I am 5'2". Okay, 5'2" without heels. So therefore, being around a lot of people has always been like, you know, a thing for me. Like, I don't really like being in large crowds. I hate having these giant people walking, towering over me. It's just not a good feeling half the time. And so I know this was going to be a event primarily attended by men a lot. You know, I wasn't trying to, I just didn't want to be in like a big crowd. Again, you would think all these men are going to be around. I would be the first in line, but I'm just not that person. And I just could not. It was just too many people. I don't like being around too many people, like not in big crowds like that. So I was kind of finding all sorts of reasons not to go. That was why. It wasn't because I wasn't physically, you know, not feeling up to it. I thought by that time I was feeling good. Well, the devil is a liar. And apparently I was just, I don't know. I think I was just doing too much. I went to the Gentleman's Factory. They had, you know, celebrated, saw half my family members who are members of the Gentleman's Factory. And, you know, hung out with some of my girlfriends who were there, you know, Laura and Joanne. So it was, I'm shouting out names as if you guys know. Laura and Joanne, they work at the Brooklyn Common. So they are, you know, the administrators, facilitators of the space. So yeah, so that's why I shouted them out. But yeah, I was there. And I mean, I met some cool people. I connected with others that, you know, I've been Instagram friends with and communicating with, but never actually met in person. I bought a t-shirt supporting my homeboy and his wife with t-shirt. And definitely was an amazing shirt, actually. I'm going to post it on the According to RP page. I wore it like the next day and I don't know. I felt good in it. But either way, so I was, you know, I even went to Wendy's after. I was hungry as hell. Went to Wendy's. Like, I was in these streets maneuvering as if I wasn't trying to like get better. And I think what killed me, though, this is what killed me. What killed me was the fact that it was a little chilly. It started a little chilly. And the dress that I had, like, you know, my entire, like how Haitians would say, my whole fal was out. My whole neck line was out. And so I allowed myself to be susceptible to attack. And so the coldness caught my neck. I already started feeling the throat percolating. I felt that one nostril again. And it was a wrap. The next morning, I had, you know, my son had to wake him up, bring him to the church for some event. And then after that, I had the golfing event that was, you know, previously postponed, but we rescheduled it. And so I had to go. it's one of those things where it's like, you know, your company is like the headliner, right? So I had to be there. I had to be there. And if I couldn't call out sick, I had to be there. So I wasn't feeling good. So I started drinking a little tea and I brought a scarf for my neck. So I brought the scarf for my neck, but I didn't bring a jacket because earlier that day it was blazing hip hop and R&B. And so I thought that, oh, okay, well, it's going to be warm. I don't want to overheat myself because that's not comfortable. Let me bring a scarf to protect my neck. It was chilly. By the time I got to the golf course, it was chilly. So although I had the scarf on my neck, my limbs were exposed. So needless to say, everyone, when I came home, I, you know, went into Haitian mode. I put on sweatpants, a hoodie, long sleeve shirt, wrapped my hair up, went under a comforter and tried to sweat this thing out. So at the moment that I'm speaking to you right now, I have gone through two or three rounds of the sweating out process. I feel a little better, but I'm clearly not 100% well. So I'm not going to play myself. I am not well. And I don't have any more tea bags in my house. This is kind of like this is all part of my womp womp. This is why I'm the womp womp. I don't know what else to say. This is the second week in a row where I'm coming, you know, at you with sick vibes, not in the good sense. And I don't know. I'm going to do my best this week to take it easy because clearly it's my lack of self-care that's really gotten me to where I am at this point. I'm even going to see if I can sneak out of work at some point. Because here's another reason why I am still not well. I have not been able to make it down to the tea mummies, the tea guns that are on Church Avenue with the tea leaves. You know, I grew up drinking leaves and stuff like that. Like, that's what got me well. It wasn't Tylenol PM and all this other stuff. And so I feel like at the state that I'm in right now, Sudafed and all this other stuff is not going to work. I need to get the leaves. But because by the time I get out of work, Mummy and Gun are already off the block, like, that's why I haven't been able to, like, get my stuff together. So I'm gonna see what I can do. I might have to pull in the troops. I might have to call in the troops to see who can go down to Church Avenue and get some leaves for me from Mummy and Gun. Because this is ridiculous. I can't be slowed down. I don't have any PTO to be taking sick days. So that is the long introductory rant. I'm sorry that it wasn't anything more positive. But the good thing is that there is a decent segment to this show. This is an interview that I had actually recorded prior with the amazing Marjorie Vale, who was Miss International, Miss New York International, a few years ago. And so she had come on one of my other platforms and we had talked about, you know, her being Haitian, her being a beauty queen and, you know, entering that world in what some would consider, like, you know, an older age as opposed to, you know, growing up in the beauty industry, and talking about how she's also a professional working woman of color who is a administrator, teacher in the DOE world. And so how are you also balancing beauty queen? A lot of questions. But I think that the show was really robust. And so since I am not feeling well today, I wanted to definitely share that interview with you all, because I think that it, you know, there was a lot of lessons that were dropped, but because she's part of our community. And so, you know, the According to RP platform, we're always here to highlight people who are doing amazing things and, you know, reintroduce people who are doing amazing things that, you know, not the, you know, the whole world didn't get a chance to know about at the time that they were doing the amazing things. But definitely keep it locked. Stay tuned, tune in. And I want to get feedback. Let me know, you know, what you think of the interview. Let me know what you think of some of the things that were discussed in the interview. I feel like, you know, although I do have some faithfuls, y'all know who y'all are, who send me the DMs, who send me the text messages, I definitely want to hear from more of you guys about what your opinion is on the show. If you want to be on the show, send me an email at accordingtorp@gmail.com, or you could find me on social media. I'm mostly an Instagram girl. You could catch me at accordingtorp, slide up in my DMs. I have Twitter, but it's not the same. So if you really want to get me, if you really want to communicate with me, I mean, my tribe, you know, so strong. They always send me DMs on crazy topics. A lot of times I don't even learn about things if it's not for you guys. So continue to send me the wacky, you know, womp womp worthy DMs. Or if there's somebody that you know should be getting bigged up in the community, send me that information as well. I'm all here for it. Again, I apologize that today I didn't really get into the preliminaries except for the womp womp, which was me. But I am soliciting prayers. I am soliciting chicken noodle soups. I am soliciting tea boxes. I am soliciting aromatherapy, whatever. I need to get better. So if you guys, you know, want to hook a sister up, let me know. I'm here to collect all of it. I will DM me and I will send you my drop off location. But with that being said, everyone, the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Marjorie Vale. Marjorie, say hello.
Hi, everyone.
So I'm really happy to have you on this platform today. I know we've met in various capacities, like, yes, over the last couple of years.
Yes, we have. But
this is the first time. I mean, I guess maybe, what, a couple of weeks ago when Fabiola Jean, shout out to Fabiola, who's been a guest on this show several times, she had her Propel Media event, or I guess cohort meeting.
Yes, and I was one of the guest speakers
at the workshop, you know. And then I saw you. I was like, "Oh, that's Marjorie, the beauty queen."
Yes, you remembered. I was like, "What?"
Yeah.
I remembered your face, but I was like, I couldn't pinpoint where.
Yeah, you know, I change, and the thing is, I give people a little bit of a break because I change my hair so often.
That's
so it's like you might have seen me three styles ago.
Yes, yes, so, yes. So yes.
So I'm not even mad anymore. I'm like, I changed my hair, guys. That's probably what happened. But yeah, and I saw you. I was like, oh, great. Because like, I've been in the same space with you before, but this was like such an intimate space.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I could actually speak to her. Because to be very honest, I was kind of still like, this is like a starstruck moment. Because
aww,
I'm like, you know, this
that's
is a
so
beauty
sweet
queen.
And I was nowhere near crown, outfit, anything.
Yes, I was like, oh, this is cool. And so from then, we ended up creating a wonderful friendship so far.
Yes, yes.
So I was like, now that I got her, I can get her on the show.
I was very excited and honored to be asked to be on your show.
I'm
like,
oh,
yay! Because I love talking.
Yes. Well, I mean, listen, who doesn't, right?
Because
there's so much things to talk about. And I feel like, you know, with Black women especially, like our experiences are so rich,
mm-hmm,
and we have so much to say, valid things to say. And
yes,
we just don't have enough platforms to, you know, I guess, capture all of it.
Yes.
So as we were, you know, getting to know each other a little more, I'm like, there's so much that we could really flesh out.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about this show is that people actually will like send me a message and say the guest you had on, like she, you know, something she said really touched me. And
aww,
so people are
amazing,
actually listening, and they're actually, you know, picking up the gems that are being dropped.
Right. And so that's important.
Exactly. Like, this is not like a talk show.
No.
You know, this is actually something to enrich people's lives. So I definitely think that your story, and I definitely am going to have you on the show a couple more times because there's so many different things that we can talk about.
Yeah.
But for today, I just kind of want to have you talk about who you are, and then we're going to maybe, like, you know, just discuss some of the important aspects of your life. Like, I really want to get into the beauty queen.
Yeah.
And I also want to get into some other, you know, areas of your life,
right,
that I think that, you know, there are people out there who would definitely benefit, you know, from listening. So who
awesome
are you?
I'm excited. Who am I? Well, like you said, I'm Marjorie Vail. I am mom to Yan Vail.
My
13-year-old. He just turned 13, so I have a teenager. I'm
aww
really scared and nervous. Pray for me, y'all. And I am wife to super photographer Roman Vail. He's a fashion photographer. And a daughter to Martha Morin. But in terms of who I am an educator. I am a literacy coach. I'm currently a literacy coach. This is my third year being a literacy coach.
Oh, cool.
And basically, I coach teachers on how to teach their students. And I love my job. And it's amazing to go from teaching to being in the supportive role. And,
mm-hmm,
and that's how I see it, just being supportive and not being not trying to be like the gotcha person, but just like, let me help you grow in this area in your teaching. So that's one of the things I am. I am also a licensed esthetician.
Oh,
and
I don't think I knew that.
No?
I knew you said you did makeup and stuff, but I didn't know it was a license involved.
Well, yes, I'm a licensed esthetician.
That's important.
And it's so funny. The reason I became a licensed esthetician was because I'm the former Mrs. New York International 2015.
Shout out.
And I wanted to learn how to do my own makeup because it's so expensive. And
yeah,
I guess we'll talk about that a little bit more. It's so expensive to pay someone to do your makeup. And I was like, want to learn how to do makeup. But I felt like I wanted to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So I became a licensed esthetician. So I'm a licensed esthetician.
Okay.
And what I said, I'm a former Mrs. New York International. And let me see. I just got my fourth degree.
Okay. You sound just like me now.
Yes.
What is the fourth degree in?
Counselor, school counseling. So I have an MA, I have an MA in education.
Okay.
And MA in MS in school counseling.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm currently working on my third master's degree.
In what?
In leadership. So, yeah.
Okay, you're definitely my spirit animal right yes. now because I'm all about... So when people are just like, how many more degrees are you going to get, Rita? Because I love to learn.
Right,
I love to be the masters of crafts. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
let's face it, in today's society, if you don't have the letters behind your name to validate what you do,
yes.
people are going to be like, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to.
So it's so funny because people, like I met, I was at my... my husband's cousin's birthday party, and her friend who I know said to me, so what degree are you on right now? And I was just like, I didn't even know. Like, people are definitely watching.
Oh, they're paying attention.
Yeah, they're paying attention. So funny, that threw me, I was taken aback, and I was like, oh, yeah, I just did. And I I'm in school so much that mm-hmm. I totally forgot I just got a degree. So I was like, oh, no, that was number four. And she was like, you're inspiring me. I was like, oh, good. It's good.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, like, because my mom, I think I get this from, I guess, the Bichotte women in my family.
Right.
Because my aunt, Rodney's Bichotte, shout out to Assembly Woman Rodney's.
Yes, she's awesome.
She has, like, 5 degrees as well, too.
Oh, good.
Like, she has a master's in, I think, mathematics. She has an MBA from Northwestern. She has, like, she was a civil engineer. She has
wow.
that degree. Like, she just keeps racking up.
That's so beautiful.
Degrees as well, too. But that makes you such a well-rounded person. Because
yes.
although, yeah, you can go to Google University and YouTube University. But there's
University.
Something about the formal training.
Yes.
And understanding that really helps you own your craft. And that's why
yes.
you're able to stand out, you know, amongst
yeah.
the rest.
It takes a lot of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of brain power. It takes a lot of, like, passion,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, you know, I like this. I want to pursue this subject or this area and really go after it.
Yeah.
Know? I have to admit, at some point, I was thinking, at one point, I did want to quit the counseling because I realized, oh, I really like leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized, I'm like, just finish, Marjorie. I mean, you're at the end and you just have an extra degree. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, just finish. But it was a crossroad because I was doing them, simultaneously at one
okay.
point. So it was just kind of like, I was pulling my hair out. But you don't know how strong you are until you're, like, in the pressure cooker and you're like, I can do this. I think I can do this. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you still are an educator, but, like, did you teach, like, elementary school, middle school, high school? Like, at what, did you teach any of those grades?
Yeah. I've taught all the even numbers.
Oh.
I've taught K, second, fourth, and sixth grade.
Ah, so
yeah.
you had the taste of the elementary and middle school
yes.
children.
Actually, my first job in the Department of Education, I taught in a private school. In the private school, I taught kindergarten. The first job I got in the Department of Education was sixth grade math teacher, Rodney's.
Yes, I know, right?
So
Bring her in.
I was a math teacher for 2 years, and... wow, middle school. I think I should be ready for my teenage kid after that.
You would think, though, but I feel like when you... because I have a middle schooler, too. He's going into the eighth grade, so he's going to be 13 in mm-hmm. November. And I was just like, what is this group?
Yeah.
Like, what is this? So when you talk about...
they're an entity.
School
themselves.
Counseling. I'm like, oh yeah, we need more. We need more school counselors that are people of color, people
yes.
from the Caribbean, people who really understand, you know, the, I guess, just the different dynamics of
yes.
household, culture, community, and how all that plays into these students at school.
That's very true. And the, you know what the funny thing, well, not the funny thing, but the, it's actually very sad. Elementary schools are only required to have one counselor, if even one counselor. So you think about, like, I work in a school that's nearly 400 students with one counselor. And where I'm at, there are a lot of crises. You know, kids go into crisis a lot. So you can imagine, of course, we have a crisis team, whatever. But that one counselor has to counsel a lot of, you know, students. So it's... I feel like elementary schools need to have more than one.
Yeah.
So it should have like three.
I'm baffled, you know, that there is just one.
Yeah, there's just one.
Especially in this day and age. Like back in the day, you know, I remember when I was in school, I wasn't really visiting. Like I didn't really know that we even had like a counselor.
I don't remember my counselor.
But now, you know, with the things that are happening now with social media and then just the bullying and everything, I feel like every, like there should be like a ratio, like 1 to 3 or something.
Yeah, there is a ratio. And the ratio is that there's only one in the elementary school.
For 400, one for 400.
Yes, exactly. Thank goodness for great social workers and psychologists. But yeah, there's only one. High schools will have multiple.
Mm-hmm.
Middle schools will have multiples, but elementary schools usually just have
like
one.
Yeah, the issues are starting so much earlier now. Like, I'm hoping that there is some sort of reformation then. I don't know, whoever's listening, if you're working with DOE, social services, mental health, whatever, just, you know, maybe we need to lobby, you know, the DOE.
You should. And create more money in the budget so that a school can have more than one.
Yeah.
You know, guidance. Well, they're no longer called guidance counselors. School counselors.
School counselors. Yes. Not guidance counselors anymore.
School counselors.
Okay. I mean, hey, what can you do about it? So you're an educator, and anybody who has kids or has any type of encounterings with kids know that being an educator is just, it's like God's work almost, right? And even though at one point I was always, you know, a little upset with my friends, or hating rather, on my friends that had summers off. I was like, you guys are prancing around.
We are
summers off. But I'm like, but now that I have a middle schooler and I feel bad for the educational staff that has to deal with him, I'm like, summer is not enough.
No, it's not. I mean, in total, we do get 3 months if you put in all the holidays and the weeks off. But when you think about it, an educator has 32 students, the cap is at 32 students in their classroom. You're talking about 32 different personalities that you have to deal with on a daily basis.
Hours at a time.
Hours. And make sure that they're all progressing and learning and thriving. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Emotionally, physically, and it's very isolating to be a teacher. You think you're in a building with 40 other teachers and you feel like, oh, it should be like a whole, you know, kumbaya, you know, but it isn't. You figure the teacher goes into their classroom, they shut the door, they're in there with 32 kids.
Yeah.
Those are the people that they're dealing with for the whole day. Mm-hmm. And then you see your colleagues at the end of the day, by then you're depleted.
Yeah.
So it's a thankless job, to be honest. And people, and you know, the people who go into it just for the spring break, they don't last long. I mean, people usually stay a teacher for 5 years. After 5 years, most people quit. And then you have those who've been teachers for years and they're like, I'm not losing my pension. Mm-hmm. So they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, they should have quit like
a long
5 years
ago.
So it's hard. It's hard. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
And they don't get paid enough.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
I find like anybody who's doing like a God's work, civil work, city work, they don't get paid enough. I mean, when I was a prosecutor, I started off at like the low end. Like my mother was making more money than me.
No.
When I first started as an attorney, a licensed practicing attorney in New York City, my mom was pulling in more money than me, to the point where she's like, why did you waste your life going to law school when you could have been a nurse?
Right, of course.
That's how she was able to slip that in.
Patients always like, nurse, doctor.
I feel like in some cases, nurse is actually higher than doctor.
Yeah, it can. They can.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're like
overtime?
Yeah.
They're killing it.
The per diem, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, they're killing it.
So, to segue a little bit, you've been in education for a very long time, educating our children. New York City thanks you.
Thank you.
How I actually got to know you and your existence was through the beauty pageant world.
Yeah.
And I have never, you were the first person that I've ever met who was Black, although I've seen them on TV, I know they exist, but Black and Haitian in the beauty pageant world, because we know how Haitians are, we know how our parents are. I was like, this is a, like, how was she able to do this? And then I had actually went to that I don't know if it
Miss
was
Haiti?
Yeah, the Miss Haiti International Pageant.
Yeah, that's where we met.
Yeah, because there was a young woman from my church that was actually competing, and so we went to support her.
Right.
And then I was like, wait, this is a thing. What is this? So talk to us a little bit about how you got in. Like, how did you even fall into this?
So it's one of those, like, never give up on your dreams kind of thing. I got married pretty young. I was 25, going on 26 when I got married. And usually pageants are cut. The cutoff age is usually, well, when I was young, mm-hmm. younger, it was about 25.
Okay.
Since then, it's gone up to 27. Some pageants are 27, 28. So since I got married at 25, I no longer qualified to be a Miss. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've always wanted because, like you said, I grew up with my family. We watched Miss America
all
the time. Miss Universe, Miss all of
local
it.
We television.
Were, like, glued to the TV. And funny enough, and I don't know if this is why it kind of got stuck in my head, one of the Miss Americas that won was Marjorie Vincent.
Mm.
And she and I have the same name. And I was just like, and she was Haitian. And I was like so blown away. And I was like, if she could do it, I can do it. So, you know, you didn't have the internet back then. So I didn't know how to get mm-hmm. involved. So when I got married, the desire, the passion was still inside of me to still try mm-hmm. to compete. So I researched. Then finally I found one and I was just kind of like, I sent in my stuff before I panicked and like talked myself out of it. And so that's how I ended up starting to be in pageants because I was just kind of like, it was a dream deferred.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's so biblical. It's like a dream deferred makes the heart grow sick. But a longing fulfilled is like a tree of life. I mm-hmm. know Proverbs, but I don't know Proverbs what. I should know that.
But you know what? Google is available to everybody.
Right.
So
but I know the verse
you can
very
look
well.
This up. look up the Proverbs and let us know.
I know the verse very well because it's like, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah. So that's when I started competing. After that, just fulfilling, just deciding I'm going to fulfill this dream, this desire, and see where it goes.
Now, what did your parents have to say about this? Because, you know, again, as Haitians, although you get married and you leave your household,
right.
They still they're control. Still involved in everything.
Yes. My mom, she was just like, okay. I think my mom was like, she wasn't your typical Haitian mom, and at the same time, I didn't grow up like most Haitian kids mm-hmm. did. She was very laid back.
Okay.
But she didn't understand it. And it's funny, the when it kind of like struck her is I was interviewed for a French magazine and
ooh.
I had a whole spread in there and she was like, what is this? So she like, can I borrow it? And then she took it to her doctor's office and she showed it to everybody in the building and I think that's when she was like, okay, maybe there's something to this mm-hmm. pageantry thing. She was just like, she was just really like, okay, all right.
If that's what you want to do.
That's what you want to spend your money on, okay? Because she was like, Sakala done, like, what is in it? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you get out of it? I'm like, what do you mean, what do you get out of it? So, yeah, she was indifferent.
Okay.
That's the word.
So how were you able to balance pageantry life with being a full-time employee with, you know, working in education?
I have to say, pageantry kind of saved me in a lot of ways. I was getting really burnt out in teaching, and I absolutely hated it. And mm-hmm. I was just like, but I knew I couldn't leave. I mean, I have family to support, you know, we need insurance or whatever, and I was saying to myself, it has to be a way to be a teacher, even though it's not my purpose, it's not my calling, and be happy at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I found that once I started to compete, it just balanced everything out. And I was so excited because I knew there was something outside of work that I was focused on, that I was okay. like striving for, that really, you know, that would fulfill me. So it really helped me to just get past that hump of, what am I doing? Why am I a teacher? What, you know, it just really gave me like this, like, ready, this excitement to mm-hmm. just be like, okay, there's more to my life than just education, you know? So I think it was beautiful. It came at the right time.
And it's interesting because as of, you know, recent, maybe a couple of months ago, we're seeing more of these beauty queens who are professional women of color. Like, mm-hmm. I don't remember which state she came from, but it was the woman, I can't remember if it was Miss USA or Miss America, but she was an attorney.
Yes.
Miss USA, and she was a black woman, educated. She was a lawyer, and mm-hmm. so I know that that's what, you know, the lawyer community was like. Oh my gosh, uh-huh. you know, they were so happy. But then it got me thinking. You know, when I was younger, watching pageants, I saw, you know, you would see like the token, you know, black mm-hmm. girl here and there, but there was always like with a lot of the movies, you know, like Miss Congeniality and some of these right. other movies, like you had like a certain perception of a beauty queen, like somebody right. who was an airhead, somebody who wasn't really that smart. They got away on their looks, and that's really like kind of what it was. And then these women would go on to be housewives or whatever.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, that in a sense shifted, this ideology of like what a beauty queen is mm-hmm. supposed to be has shifted now that you're seeing professional women doing it. So then that's why, you know, for me, I'm like, I'm asking you like, what got you into it? Because right. some people would say like, how does a lawyer get into, like, what is the appeal? Like, what, why would somebody get into that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, when you think about the Miss Universe and the Miss USA, Mrs. America, they're all college students who are striving, and some of them were already established in their career. So they've, it's been for, you know, years that, you know, a pageant girl was someone of quality and of substance. Yeah. It wasn't someone who was just like, you know, you have your daddy's rich little girl yeah. kind of thing. But it was quality women who are like going to change the world. They just were doing this to get money.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a big check after, you know, mm-hmm. winning. And so it's not like, oh, this generation of pageant women are like educated. They've always been educated.
Okay.
So I think that's a common misconception. I think what people fail to realize, it takes a lot of work to get ready for a pageant. It's not like, because it's not just about, you have your beauty pageants. They're different ones. They were beauty pageants, and then there are just like pageants. So there are beauty pageants where, yes, first and foremost, your face is what they are looking for because mm-hmm. they want someone to represent their organization and say, oh my gosh, like I want to be beautiful like Miss so-and-so, right? And then you have your pageants, other pageants, regular pageants that are just, they're platform-based so that you have to have a cause. Now, in a beauty pageant, you have to have a cause too, but that's not always the first and foremost what they're looking at. They're looking at your talent, your beauty, and those types of things. So all of that aside, you have to prepare. Like, you can't be inarticulate and be a pageant queen. Like, okay, you yeah. have to be able to speak well, speak on the spot, you know? And that takes a lot of training, a lot of training. And you have to sit in an interview and really convince five judges, six judges, whatever it is, whether it be one-on-one. Sometimes it's round robin, and sometimes it's like, you know, one-on-one, and then you kind of shift over to the next judge. You have to be able to convince that person in a span of 3 to 5 minutes that you are worthy of that title and that you are the one that they should choose to be the face of this organization. Mm-hmm. That takes skill. You have to be able to speak, and you have to be able to show that you're passionate about your platform and that you're really going to work towards that cause, that you're someone that's personable. Like, you, people can't walk up to you and you'd be like, who are you? Mm-hmm. Like, giving people the side eye and being really nasty and mean. Like, you know, you have to be approachable, because that's the first thing people are going to say. Oh, I met Mrs. New York. She is so nice.
Yeah.
She is so sweet. You don't want them to say, oh, I met Mrs. New York. She's really snobby. She wouldn't even take a picture with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We don't want those hashtags.
Right. Exactly. And so it's, and so on top of being articulate, on top of being a service, because one of the things you'll hear, you hear a pageant person when they announce themselves, they say, "You're Mrs. New York of 2015, right? So in essence, what they're saying is, I'm your service woman for this year. I'm your face of service for this year, mm-hmm. you know? And so, you know, they work really, really hard to be able to be prepared to be able to prove that they're worthy of this job. Then on top of that, you got to do walking. Make sure you're walking right. Then you got to make sure that your outfits are on point, that your hair is on point, that your makeup's on point. So you got to be the total, total, total package. And that takes a lot of practice. I can't even tell you the amount of interview questions I went over with another friend. I had a friend, Amicia. Shout out to Amicia. who we call each other PB.
We love our friends.
She was my PB, my pageant buddy. And she and I would call each other once a week and we would, you know, do a Q&A back and forth. I would question her. She would question me. And we would really just, you know, support one another. But as well as, you know, correct. If you say this, it sounds like this. You should say this better. Mm-hmm. So it was just, it takes a lot to prepare for a pageant. It's not an easy thing. Now, what people see is just like the accolades of it all and just like the attention.
Yeah.
And the adoration. The crown. And it's like, oh my gosh. I think I worked really hard that year. I worked really hard that year because you have to make a certain amount of appearances as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was starting to see you, especially with the Haitians. You know, once they're like, wait, we have a Haitian beauty queen. They're like, you were everywhere. Yeah, like, you had my installation ceremony for Halani. There was like, Miss New York is in the building.
and it was great. They really, the Haitian community really embraced me. And I was really, really grateful because I felt like I never really had to search for appearances because, you know, it's so funny for when your aunt was elected and they had this huge party for her at Woodland.
Yeah.
On Flatbush. And I remember my cousin, who's a good friend of hers, said, you know, just wear your crown, whatever, you know, your sash, whatever. And I walked into this building. I don't even know this woman. She grabbed me by the arm. She's like, Mrs. New York is here. Mrs. New York is here. Rodney's, did you take a picture with her? And I was like, poor Rodney's is trying to like, whatever, you know? And it's just like pictures upon pictures. And I was just like, I was so excited. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
Just to be, you know, loved and supported. And it's a give and take. And I had to give as well, you know, give my time and my energy. And, you know, I was always on, you know, so it was a beautiful thing. I really enjoyed that year.
So now you talked about platform.
Yeah.
What was your platform when you were Miss New York?
My platform when I was Miss New York was stillbirth awareness. And it was stillbirth awareness, but for me, so it's interesting because the first time when I had competed for Miss New York a first time, I didn't win. So this is my second time around was like the lucky charm. And so the first time my platform was Haiti.
Okay.
And I was nervous to do stillbirth awareness because it's such a taboo subject and people don't like to talk about babies dying. But inevitably, it's a reality. And so that time around, I decided I was going to go for it. Not because I was uncomfortable with it, but because I was afraid of making other people uncomfortable, especially in that kind of a setting.
Yeah.
And it's, and once you win the crown for your state, you still have to do a national pageant. All of the states come together and then you basically one person wins for the ultimate title. So I decided to do stillbirth and I was like, you know what? this can be my only chance of helping people to really understand what stillbirth is about, especially because for it's something that I had gone through myself.
Okay.
It's going to be 15 years in September that we lost our first child. And I really, really wanted to know people to know that that this was happening. And it's something that's really rampant for African-American women, minority women, mm-hmm. not just African-American women, that happen to the most, especially because we're the ones that no matter what degree we have, how much money we make, we are just like set to the side in terms of medicine and people really taking us seriously. And that was very apparent when Serena talked about her whole situation, how like this is Serena Williams, champion of like the world.
Exactly. Kinda.
And she was overlooked. No one wanted to listen to her. And so it happens. It happens more often than we think. I would say 26,000 babies a year, and maybe the number have gone up, are born still. And so I really wanted to shed light on it. I didn't know about it until it happened to me. I actually had heard that it happened to a friend of my cousin's, and then I was like, what? There's such a thing? And mm-hmm. I was like, and for a second, the thought came into my head, what if that happens to me? And I kind of let it go, and not knowing that it did happen to me. And we lost him in labor. So it's not something you think about. You think you get to a certain stage, you're like, oh.
And that's it.
Whew, I'm there. And it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah.
What happened to one of my friends, I'm friends with him, the father, mm-hmm. From church, you know, we go way back, and about a couple, let me not say a couple, because they just had they tried again and they had their second baby. I would say maybe about a year and a half ago, it happened to him where his wife, they had the baby shower, wife was not like, and lost in labor.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really great to see like the church community and just friends and family like surrounding him. And, you know, because he ended up ascending to becoming a preacher. So it was kind of like, you know, it's like no matter how much faith you have, obviously, like this is something that's going to hurt. It's going to tear you apart. But they did try again, and then they have their son now. Right. So it's beautiful to see. But I've heard of other people. This was the first person that was close to me that mm-hmm. that happened to. But I have heard of other people, you know, that this has happened to. And I could only imagine, you know, just the emotional toil or turmoil, whatever that one would go through. But as common, I guess, I don't want to say common, like it happens all the time, but as it's not something that's so like out there though.
No.
Like this is something that is happening.
Yes.
I don't see so much advocacy and awareness really brought around the issue. So when you had mentioned platform, I'm like, I wonder if that was her platform.
Since
I know that was your experience, how was it received? Like, so once you did declare that to be your platform, how was it received?
Well, people never know what to say. Mm. That's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They would say, oh, I'm so sorry. And I think people are afraid to ask questions because they feel like, oh, I don't want to dredge it back up again for you. But I'm like, I'm talking about it, you know? So I think it just makes people nervous and they don't know what to say. And even throughout the process, I remember when, you know, it happened and we, you know, we had our friends and our family rally around us. And I remember there were certain people and friends who I didn't hear from at all. And it's because they didn't know what to say, which is something I would suggest not to do. I think people need to not make it about themselves and make it about the person who's hurting. So, but one thing that stood in my mind, and I wish all people were like this. I had a friend in one of my colleagues at the school that I worked at, the private school, wealthy private school that I worked for. And I was the co-coach of the track team with her.
Mm.
And she was this white woman. She was gay, you know, total polar opposites of who I am, but just the nicest person ever. And so I remember I received mail, car, not even a mail. It was like in this envelope, this clear envelope, and it was like a post-it, I think. It was like something like that. And she, and in it, it says, "I have no words, but I love you."
Aww.
And I remember thinking, wow, right? Like, she understood, like, what could I say to this woman that's going to make this better? Like, nothing. But I do want her to know that I love her. And I, that was such a poignant moment for me, like, so touching and so, like, moving that, you know, someone went out of their way and really just didn't think about themselves, but just wanted me to know that they were there with me. And so I think that, I think as more and more people start to see stillbirth as, you know, just something like that happens, you know, like if you, sadly, if you hear someone is ill or something like that, like you just need support and you just need love, you know? And so, and it's very isolating because for a whole year, and I kind of isolated myself in a lot of ways just because here's the kicker with this. For me, when we lost our son, I had four other girlfriends. We all due at the same time. And so, and I look back on those pictures too. Everyone's pregnant and everyone else went to have their baby. And I was the only one who didn't have my baby. So I literally at one point was just like, and get the kicker for this is my very, very best friend was pregnant at the same time as me. And she went to have her baby. And for some reason, it's like the spirit was talking to me. It was like, prepare yourself. She might need you. And it was literally 2 months after we lost our son. After I like had given her a lot of my stuff because it's like, you're going to need it, take it, whatever. And she literally, she called me. Her husband called. She was like, she said she doesn't want anybody in that room but you. Not even her husband. And so I had to like put my big girl panties on and go and be there for her. But then it got to a point where I was just kind of like, I can't do this anymore. I need space. I need time. And so, yeah, I kind of separated myself from everyone. It was just me and my husband. And I healed in a way that I was, that was good for me, you know?
And that's what's more important. Yeah. A lot of times people feel like they have this like idea of how, what healing looks like.
Right.
And so when you move on to, I guess, address your issues and deal with your issues, like in a way that's different.
Right.
People don't really know how to deal with that.
Mm-mm. So long as it's healthy.
Yeah.
I do have to say that I lost my faith. I did lose my faith for a while. For a year, I would say I lost my faith and it took a while to get back. But I have to say, what I love about God is that he, those things don't bother him.
Mm-hmm. He expects it even.
He doesn't take it personal.
Yeah.
So he's probably just looking like, girl, do you, you know, I'm here. I'm not going when anywhere. You're ready.
When you're ready.
So yeah. So it was a year of just kind of like figuring out how I'm going to get through it. I remember sitting at the window of the hospital and thinking to myself, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I really like, God, how am I going to get through this? I really don't. And sometimes I sit back and I think to myself, yeah, God got you through. That's like a huge thing. Yeah.
So I had a colleague of mine who, you know, she was on the show, not a colleague, a former classmate of mine. She had actually came on the show maybe a couple of months ago talking about like loss and basically being able to work and be productive while dealing with loss because she lost her mother, her father, her boyfriend within the span of a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
And so I guess the question I have for you, because I'm sure that there is somebody listening that has gone through this, is going through this, or has somebody close to them that has gone through this. How were you able to be functional at work? Or maybe I'm saying it too early. Were you able to be functional, you know, at work, especially as an educator working with children while going through something like this?
I would say I was a shell of myself, and everyone knew that at my job. And, you know, it was harder for me in a sense where I was one of two Black women who worked am I at this particular mm-hmm. school? Everyone knew me to be smiley and happy and, you know, talkative, and it was just the opposite. I mean, I tried, but it was very, 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 very difficult. And I don't know how, because at the time I wasn't praying. I wasn't like holding mm-hmm. on to the faith. But I guess, you know, my husband and I tried to just have like kind of like a social, our own little social calendar. And, you know, we would do stuff like apple picking mm-hmm. and, you know, going to the movies. Or we traveled a lot. And then traveling, I think, really, really helped me. And I think traveling at some point really helped me to reconnect with God. And so those were the things. And I had really, and I had great friends who wanted to be supportive. But I felt like I just needed to hash it out between me, my husband, and God. Mm-hmm. At some point when I got there. And so it was very, very, very difficult. We thought about therapy, but at the time there was no such thing. Can I just tell you, when I was in the hospital, even the social worker there didn't know what to do with me.
Wow.
Because it didn't happen. And she was a Haitian woman, sweet as pie. She was like, I mean, I have this group, I have this sweetheart. She came every day to come see me. I'm sure she didn't even have to, but she did. And just like there was nothing like, you know, to really help someone that have gone through what I've gone through to really support us. So I read and I watched movies, and like I said, my husband and I had a social calendar, and we traveled and I wrote. I journaled a lot. I journaled a lot. And I was recently reading a lot of the stuff that I wrote while I was going through my journey, and how heartbroken I was and fighting with God. Like, how could you? Mm-hmm. So mad at you. So, yeah, just like it was a conglomerate of things of just getting myself to the path of where I kind of was walking again.
Okay.
I just kind of felt like for a while I was just kind of floating, just kind of like existing.
Mm-hmm.
But funny enough, I never thought about doing anything to my, like, harming myself or like, oh, I need to leave this world. The kind of thing. I think I had an effervescent for life. The other thing that I can say that really truly saved me, and I think that really helped me, and God really helped me to focus, and I think it's always been me, but I think it's become more me now. It's like one day I finally made peace with God at that point. I said to him, I said, God, I don't know what I should, like, what do I, like, how do I get my mind to not think about these things?
Yeah.
And I was watching the news, and I saw something about New York Cares and what they do. I don't know if you ever heard of New York Cares.
Yeah, I've heard of New York Cares. Yeah, they have their like walks and stuff. Belt. Yeah,
it's like a conveyor belt to volunteering. So many different types mm-hmm. of volunteering that you could do. And I saw about it. I saw something about it, and I was like, I said, we should go, because you had to do like a workshop before you can be official. Yeah. So we did it, and Roman, I don't think ever did anything. One thing. I love him, but that's not him.
That's not his
gotta
thing.
Be you. And let me tell you, when I did something like once a week, twice a week, I was doing some kind of service, and I felt so much joy. I felt so much joy. And I remember thinking, God said, that's service. That's mm-hmm. when you know, at some point, yes. In the beginning, you're going to think me, 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 me. But at some point, you got to kind of start letting go and just saying, okay, what kind of footprint am I going to leave? Now that I'm on the ground again, what's my footprint going to be? And so when I started to serve, I just felt this like freedom and this joy that I know didn't come from like, from me, you know? And I really think, I really felt like it saved my life, you know? And I just kept looking for other ways to serve. Not with just New York Cares, but other ways that I could serve. And it's just been me since then. servitude, and not just servitude like, you know, finding an organization, but I think about how I can serve just like my friends,
yeah,
you know, my family members, whether it's monetary or whether it's just being there or whether they're having a party and what can I do for you kind of thing or whatever it is. Like, my mantra is service, because only that's where you find joy and peace whenever you want to kind of go fold into yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I felt like if I started to think more about myself that I would fold, I would crumble. But the more that I was external and started thinking about people who needed me, yeah, me, broken me, someone needed me. Someone needed me to serve them food. Someone needed
yeah.
me to, you know what I mean? And so when I started to think more that way, that's when I was just kind of like, wow, Margie, like, you're needed. You have a purpose. You can do something. And so that's something that I honestly got honest. If I don't teach my son anything, that's the legacy I would love to leave for him. That servitude, you know, is important. It's the joy. It's the joy that comes from mm-hmm. within to be able to give to other people. And I see slowly but surely that that's the kind of kid that he's becoming.
That's good.
I know. Took a while.
I mean, listen, with these kids, it's like...
That's another conversation.
It's another podcast talk.
But, you know, having gone through a stillbirth and surviving and... Because I thought at some point, I actually thought I was going to die.
Oh, wow.
Because you know, we had to have an emergency C-section and all of that. And nowadays, you know, then, of course, then I had my second son. And whenever I think I am not strong or I feel like I can't do something, I say, Margie, you got pregnant a second time.
Yeah.
Whole 9 months. Gave birth. Girl, you're strong. Guy's like, you better go sit somewhere and tell yourself you're not strong.
Stop doubting yourself.
Yeah, yeah, anyone who go like, I mean, and sometimes one of the things I don't like, I think that happens often, like someone would have a miscarriage or someone will lose a child like earlier than when I did.
Mm-hmm.
And they would kind of try and compare. And for me, a loss is a loss is a loss.
Yeah.
You know, you as a mother, you know, unless... something crazy happened. Usually you kind of connect as soon as you find out you're pregnant. You're just kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. You're talking to the,
yeah,
to the
yeah,
bean.
Your belly. Something's growing inside of me. Like you're just like, you know, and you're thinking so far ahead, even early, as soon as you find out, you're like, oh my gosh, you know? And so I tell women, don't minimize your loss. You know, whether it was a miscarriage, you had it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, still it's hope yeah. that died,
yeah.
you know? A piece of hope that died.
Now, how do you, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's been 15 years now, right? Mm-hmm. September will be 15 years. Do you ever find that people, I guess, try to minimize the experience? Like, listen, like that was 15 years ago. Like you have another child. Like, okay, that happened. Like kind of almost like, you know, get over it. Like, why are we still talking about this? It's been so long.
No, but I feel like people do that when they don't talk about it.
Ah, okay.
When people like, and you know, Haitians are pretty good for that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's so funny that, you know, my aunt came to see me with my cousin, a cousin that I was very close to. Shout out to Ernest Duval, Pastor Duval in Florida, West Palm Beach, who was sweet enough. Him and his aunt came to see me after I lost my child. Just to support me and pray for me. And I remember my aunt saying, you know, how she, you know, saying she had lost her firstborn. Her firstborn had died. And my mom being like, they're like this close. Mm-hmm. My aunt and my mom, like my mom was like 18 months older than her. My mom was like, oh yeah, I totally forgot that happened. Like, how do you forget something so like...
Haitians are very good for that.
Yeah, so I find that no one's ever had the audacity to say, get over it, but no one wants to talk about it. And no one remembers the anniversary. Mm. And so that's why I try to be very good at trying to remember, like if someone tells me that they've lost a child, I try to remember the date and I always honor that child. I have a friend
Margaret, who lost her baby, not through stillbirth, but her her daughter had like some kind of chromosomal issues, and I text her for the anniversary, and I was like thinking of your angel. And so when people don't want to talk about it, I feel like that's more of a like a this person or this child never existed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's more of a slap than it is if someone says, yeah, get over it. Because you'll find one in like hundreds of someone to say that. No one's ever said that to me.
Yeah. But people, the actions and the way that they respond is almost, it's like equatable
people
almost.
Don't,
yeah.
They don't remember. They don't remember.
And I think the slap is when they do say like, oh wow, I did forget.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you had another one. Like things like comments mm-hmm. like that, I think.
I didn't get there yet, but I'm sure when I'm 60,
I know, someone right? be like,
oh yeah, you did have another child.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's why I'm very big. Like people say, oh, how many kids do you have? I say, well, I had two, right? I have one. And I always, always, always honor my son's memory. I always say, my husband is the same way. We always say that he existed, that he was around and he was alive. And we lost him. We have pictures of him. We celebrate his birthday every year with our own son. So we always, we keep his memory alive by reminding people, yeah, he existed. You can't hide him.
You can't hide him, yeah.
You can hide him on your own, but not in my presence, you know? Yeah.
So how has advocacy for stillbirth looked for you since you began since you've declared it as your platform in 2015? Now mm-hmm. that we're in 2019, about to be in 2020, so let's say like 4 or 5 years later, are you involved with any organizations or is there, you know, something that you're doing that maybe we can help support you?
Right. It's something, I think that's something we were talking about in the beginning. It's something I'm trying to kind of figure out myself right now. Star Legacy Foundation is doing some really good work raising money because the thing is that we want to do studies to mm-hmm. figure out what is going on. Like what are causing these things? For me, I have what you call velamentous insertia, which means the umbilical cord was attached to the sac and not to the placenta.
Okay.
So he was kind of wrapped around, like the cord was wrapped around his neck. I was at a birthing center at St. Luke's Hospital. I was in the hospital, but mm-hmm. it was in the birthing center. And because I was pushing, and because the umbilical cord was not attached to the placenta, it tore easily.
Oh.
So it happened. So okay. This is a thing, you know. So there are various reasons why people have stillbirth, you know. So we wanted what Star Legacy Foundation is doing is raising money so that we can do these studies. So we can study the placentas to figure out what's going on with that. Like at one point did this occur? I have a girlfriend who, you know, usually baby stillbirths happen in utero. So mm-hmm. at 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, you know, like for me and your friend during labor, it's not very often. I mean, it happens not very often. So Star Legacy Foundation is raising raising money for those types of studies. I know the Baby Center, a friend of mine, a woman that I met through online, and her name is escaping me right now. What is her name? Oh my gosh. Anyway, I'll figure it out. It comes to, and she had a loss too, and she's raising money as well in how to support women and like mm-hmm. hospitals. Sometimes they give teddy bears for the moms to hold after they've had, they have no baby, whatever. So things like that, so I'm trying to find because I've worked with both.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't worked out for me. Like I just felt like I haven't found my place in those two.
Yeah.
But they're both doing great, great, great work. So I'm trying to figure out what it is that I want to do in support, because the thing is, one of the things that Baby Center does is that it definitely is much more aware of women of color.
Okay.
That I like that aspect of it. So
and that's important because we know in our culture we do push things to the side.
Oh, yeah.
And for I don't want to say forget, but we just don't talk about these things. So that's why we can be in a room of 50 people and there could be three women who had it, you know, in, I guess, went through stillbirth and nobody will know.
No. Well, I side note, I remember my mom was like, why are you crying? Like, stop crying. Mm-hmm. Like, this is after the hospital, whatever. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Yeah. Like, I'm going through a lot, you know, because they don't want you to be sad. And now that I'm a mother, I can see that she's like, you know, her thing was, oh, I don't want you to be sad. She didn't want me to end up harming myself, yeah, anything, as a mother, but it comes across so harsh, yeah, you know? So I'm still trying to figure out what it is that what kind of advocacy that I would like to do, mm-hmm, in terms of stillbirth, because on another subject, you know, there's a lot going on with my own child that I would like, you know, to figure out how to kind of merge the two, mm-hmm, to really be, you know, an advocate.
Yeah. Well, I think the umbrella of mom is enough of an umbrella, oh, yes, to be able to address all the different issues, because I think the one thing about being a mother, and it's interesting because I've been a mother for almost 13 years now, but because a lot of my friends don't have kids or they don't have kids at the same age as my son, I've always felt like alone in the mother world. So yes. Some people don't even know that I'm a mom. Like, I don't really talk about the different issues that I go through, but I think that, you know, as I'm meeting other, you know, I'm putting myself out there and actually meeting other mothers and trying to create friendships with people who have children, especially within my age.
Right.
I realize that it's like there's, you know, there's the hat of mom, and then there's so many different things that fall under that, whether it be, you know, whatever issues or just even if your child, you know, seemingly has no quote unquote issues, but just navigating, you know, puberty with your child and going through school with
Lord
your child.
Help us.
And like, so all of that, I feel like, you know, it's like you can have this umbrella and be able to be an advocate for all things, you know, mother and child almost. Right.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, we definitely here at Free to Women, Frida's World, will definitely support, you know, and help figure out, you know, because it's something that I'm realizing is, you know, it's important for, I think, mothers especially to connect. Mm-hmm. And even those who are not mothers yet, because that's the one criticism you hear, like, well, I'm not a mom. And, you know, all these moms are always talking around, but you want to pay attention.
But you're an auntie.
You're an auntie. You're a sister. You're,
cousin.
You know, and so it is important. So you might not be like a mother who like pushed out a child or had a child, but these, you know, when it talks about children, especially in the community, when they talk about, you know, it takes a village and there's all these like foreign concepts, right? It's really important, I think, even for the younger women of color, for the women of color who do not have kids of their own, to still be connected with the conversation.
Right.
Right. Because like you said, they're aunties, they're sisters, and they're encountering these children regardless. And it's a lot of work being a mother, especially a person of color being a mother, because you have so many different things that you have to think about that others might not have to.
Right.
And so to create that support system within a community is really important.
It really is. It's so funny that you say that, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot. It's I'm on social media and I talk a lot about my son now, because he's on the autism spectrum, and he's high functioning. But, you know, as you and I have spoken about privately, you know, I'm going through a lot with him, and that's a whole nother thing.
Yep.
But one of the things that I don't, he's not on social media. I never, you know, shown his picture or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I have, but not since he was 4.
Yeah.
So, but I make sure that one of the things I want to talk about on my social media presence is motherhood and being a mom to him, and how hard it is, but at the same time how rewarding it is, and how like I don't know what the heck I'm doing sometimes, and sometimes I do feel like I know what I'm doing, and you know, just navigating through that and making sure that I raise him to A, be self-sufficient, and being like a stand-up citizen in
this
society,
this universe,
you know? But I don't like to sugarcoat, you know, this motherhood thing. And I think people like to make it glamorous. You know, it's like the kid is, their kid is an accessory, and your kid is not an accessory.
Yeah,
you know, because I like to think my kid is just as handsome as the next kid, you know. But
well, I've seen him, guys, and he actually is very handsome. He is quite handsome.
Thank you, thank you, and so I therefore choose my words to convey, you know, my relationship with him and just, you know, how it is, you know, and under the guise of being a beauty pageant, like the temptation can be there to want to make everything look pretty and beautiful and sweet and packaged really nicely, but it isn't. And it's not me, and it's not what I want to portray about myself. I want, when people meet me or look at my social, you know, media handles, as if they see an authentic person.
Yeah.
Who say, oh my gosh, like I post things that he says and they're funny and they're real and they're raw. And it's just like, but that's who he is. And
yes.
And do I want him to say certain things? No. But hey, he's his own person. And he's at the point now where he'll be like, you know, sometimes I'll be like, oh, this is a cue. It's just the back of his head. And he was like, no, I'm not supposed to be on social media. And I'm like, okay, I respect that. You know, you don't want to be. And then there are times like, why don't you want the world to see me? They're not ready for you. Yeah, they're not ready
it's
for
like,
you.
It's like, listen, give them a couple of years.
But I've been so empowered being his mom. I made me realize I can only do one.
Yeah, no, I'm one and done too. The shop is closed. The shop is closed.
So one and done. It's not even funny. Like every Haitian will like, and that's the other thing. Haitians will like, what do you mean you have the one? And that's when the stillbirth conversation comes. I'm like, no, I've had another. Yeah. I will tell. I've told every Haitian who ever said that to me. You can, you know, because they'll say that's lazy to have one child is lazy. Oh, yeah. You've heard that,
well,
right?
Well, I've heard. So, you know, I think I said this one time on the show. My grandmother, Lord, you know, bless her soul, used to say, yon gren je se pas je.
Yeah.
So basically, one eye is not a real eye because you need two eyes to see properly. So you only have the one eye. And then she would go into more morbid discussions like, well, if you were to lose him, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So, and I still get it. You know, I'm 35. My son is like, you know, he's a teenager. But they're just like, so where's the girl?
I would say to them, who says I'm going to have a girl?
Exactly.
What if I have
a
boy?
I don't have
boy?
Kim Kardashian money to be picking out chromosomes and then wait. No.
Exactly. My first child was a son too. So I'm like, I would already have two sons. Who's to say I won't have a third son?
Exactly. You know? That's how you end up with whole football teams. And
actually, my cousin's best friend, in pursuit of having boys, a boy has six daughters.
Yeah, see? That's too much.
I'm not. Mm-mm.
That's where adoption comes in.
Yes. Yes. And if I had the money, I would so have a surrogate. I would. But yeah, so I'm very honest that sometimes I don't like motherhood. It's hard.
Yeah, no, it's not glamorous, and it's not for the faint of heart. It is not. That's why.
It's not.
When I you know, have the mean mug on, it's just because life is interesting. Or when people are like, why don't you say life is great? I'm like, I acknowledge that life is, I'm alive.
Life is great. Yeah.
I'm alive.
You're healthy.
I'm I'm moving around.
You're grateful for those things. But why can't you be honest, though?
Yeah.
See, that's what I don't like. I want people to be honest and say, you know what? This really sucks. Or sometimes I love my kid. I don't like him right now.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a big difference with that. You can love, but not like, because kids will do things to make you wish they were never born.
Yeah. They do. And people hate to hear that. And some people will take such offense to that, but you know, that's their business. You know what I mean? The truth is the truth. It's like, let's not be fake about it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's why sometimes, you know, you look at social media and people's relationships. I hate this whole goals thing. I really do.
Yeah, relationship goals, hashtag. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't really know what your goals actually are by that picture.
Two months later, they're breaking up. And you're like, wait a second. They were just like the model. Like, no one is the model anything. For me, goals, character is goal for me. Like, if I like something about someone's character that I feel like I would love to emulate, I like that, you know? like, for what you see of me today is not the me of 20 years ago, you know? And I remember that I had a cousin who lived with me. Shout out to Nadine Mentor.
Nadine!
Co-founder of TGI, yeah. The Greatest Investment. It's a girls' camp that she does every summer.
Oh, cool.
And they do all these amazing things, you know, just teaching them how to be women of color and just, you know, growing and having aspiration to go to college.
We need Nadine on the show.
I know.
Nadine, if you're listening.
She's in Florida, but I'm sure she can Skype in.
She can Skype in.
She totally can Skype in. She's amazing. And she used to live with me right after college. And she was just like this sunny person, like, good morning and hi. Oh my gosh, she's so sweet. She's like so huggy, touchy feely. And that was not me back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be like, oh, she's like, oh, you're such a sourpuss. I'm like, leave me alone. She's like, you're such a dweeb. She's still got me a dweeb. But I remember thinking, like, you know, we did a lot of stuff together during that time when she lived with me. And I used to like admire her a lot. Cause I was like, wow, people like take to her. They really kind of like her. We get on the bus and she would tell the bus driver, good morning. He'd be like, good morning. And I was like, I'm going to try to be a little nicer. See how that works.
See how far that takes you.
See how far that takes me. And it's really something that I took on. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, even if someone is like, doesn't say good morning back, like I'm confident in the fact that I was my authentic self.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah.
You know, whether you want to have a good morning or not, that's your business. But I feel it.
Yeah.
It's a good morning, you know? And so that is a character that I took on because I found beauty in it, you know? So those to me are goals, you know, like, you know, I have a friend, Diana, shout out to Diana, who's a beast. Like she used to have us go running. 5 a.m.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But she's like one of those people who, like, when she decides to do something, she's gonna do it.
Everyone needs a Diana in their camp.
They do.
Yes.
Man, I remember for my own birthday, she was like, wouldn't it feel great to know that you went running on your birthday? And I'm like, leave me alone. But I went running, but she's just like that type of person. I like that about her. And so that's something I try to emulate when I'm trying to execute stuff. I'm like, okay, I need to have all my ducks in a row to figure out how I'm going to do it. So those are the things that I feel like those are the things that are goals to me. I don't want to look at somebody's life and be like, oh, I want to be like that. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, we don't really know. Outside of the picture.
Yeah.
We really don't know.
Exactly.
What it is.
So one of the things I'm really grateful for is that I didn't grow up in the internet era, social media era.
I mean, to be very honest.
I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
Like I could grow up to be me and just be okay.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
So what are the next steps? Because we talked about, I mean, you're still going to be an educator because you keep racking up these degrees. So we know you're not leaving the education world. That I think is safe to say.
This is the last one for a while.
For now, Rita. Exactly. For a while. You hear that, people? PhD. We're going to be talking Dr. Vail soon.
No, my husband would kill me. I'll only be a doctor if I could go to Harvard. That's my goal.
And that might listen, they have online Harvard business schools, Harvard education schools. That might work out for you.
That's definitely my goal. That's my goal.
But in terms of pageantry, are we looking into maybe getting into more pageants, or is that like you fulfilled your, you know?
No, we're still gonna be doing that. I can't put my crown down yet. I have so much more. There's so many more that I would like to participate in. Mm-hmm. So many more crowns that I would like to win.
I'm like, shoot. I mean, I was talking to you before this. I was like, you know, I love trying new things. I'm one of those people, I might not stick to something forever, but I would like to at least try it and engage. And I'm like, huh, maybe I can be a beauty queen.
Yes, you can.
So we'll be talking about that.
Like you said, you should always try something once. You know? But there are certain things that, you know, that's not for me. Like, I have my girlfriend, Daphne, who is just like, you know, that's just not my thing. But there are other things that you feel like, oh, I want to try this. Or I'll try that. Or I'll try this. So we know what we can aim for. And so the fact that it's on your mind,
like,
I grew up watching. And you know what? And they have so many different, like they have Mrs. like the ones that I had done. They have Ms. for women who are not married or women who, excuse me, were married or have children mm-hmm. but no longer married.
Yeah, because I miss MS. So
yes,
I'm still single.
You're Ms. So there are so many Ms. competitions, but I really do think that there's so much to gain from pageantry yeah. that is like, it's like, I think once people really look into it and not put their nose down at it,
mm-hmm.
then it's good. You know, it's funny. I find that sometimes people do that with like younger people.
Okay.
Well, that's not true because older people, they'd be like, why would you want to do a pageant? No one's ever really said that to me. People are always like, oh, but I think as a married woman and a mother, I think people were like, really? That's really great.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if the married aspect of it is what makes it more, a little bit more respectable.
Yeah.
But I know some married women who some people are like, why are you doing a pageant? Mm-hmm. Isn't that so passe? Like, it's old, but it's not old. It's never going away.
Yeah, it's not going away.
It's expensive, but it's never going away.
Yeah.
But I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it so much. Because I think about, what am I wearing day one? And I love to shop. So I'm like, what am I wearing day two? Like, you know, and these nationals are like a week long.
Mm.
And you're like putting your best foot forward every single day. So it's an amazing experience.
So we'll be seeing more of Marjorie Vale yes. in the pageant world.
I have some great like workshops that I'm thinking about. I think
we're talking
that I'd love to do in support of women empowerment.
Yeah.
It's you know, I have a lot in my, I think, you know, I'm one of those, I've been talking to God a lot about like what my purpose is and mm-hmm. what is my calling, you know. And I think you're probably one of those people who's kind of figured it out. Like, you know,
I'm still figuring out my purpose and calling.
You're doing something, yeah. You know. And I feel like I figured it out, but I'm trying to put it together.
Okay, like fine tune it and really see what. Yes. What to do first, maybe put like line your ducks in a row, like you were saying before.
And then making sure that I'm surrounded by people who can actually guide me, who mm-hmm. are ahead of me, that I can like look to and be like, you know what, like, you know, I said to you, I'm just thinking about where I want to have this workshop. And mm-hmm. you're like, oh, look at this, you know, website. Yeah. Ta-da! You know?
Bada bing, bada boom.
So I encourage women to surround themselves with women who are just like, are go-getters, who are about something.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's, you want to have friends who like you have fun with, but you want to also have those friends who are just going to be like, girl, come on. What are you doing?
Yep, it's Monday. I didn't see nothing. What's going on?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
like Diana.
Yeah. And then you need a cheerleader like Daphne, who's yes. like, girl, I tell her I was doing this past podcast. She's like, I know you're going to kill it. I was like, oh, I need her. Yes. Yeah. That's what you need beautiful, wonderful women who are just like, you know, who just have different jobs in their, yeah. in your life,
okay.
you know?
And then I know that you're definitely going to continue on figuring out the best role for your advocacy in stillbirth. So you have a lot of things popping. 2020,
yes.
2019, because you know, we're even though we're, I guess, approaching the fourth quarter, so much can still be accomplished in the next couple of months.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Of course. And, you know, for me, there's a huge fear factor
mm-hmm.
that I'm pushing past through. And like I said, the reminder of like, you know, being pregnant again after losing yeah. my childhood, all the and other stuff that I've done in fear, you know, and you just got to do stuff while you're still afraid.
Yeah, I think that's the best. That is, I think that's where not just the creative stuff comes out, but like real, like I guess you have the drive because
it's kind of like
I'm afraid, but I have nothing to lose.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm excited, and you know, I've been listening to a lot of, you know, kind of motivators.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard of E.T., the hip hop preacher.
No, I have not heard of the hip hop preacher. Oh my gosh. I love all things hip hop.
But he's...
Is he hip hop preacher legit though? Like, is he...
No, I don't think he called... He is a guy. I love his thing. It's all about that dog. I love it. But he has such an amazing story. He was homeless and it took him 12 years to get his bachelor's.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Story of perseverance.
Yeah, he's definitely a
resilience.
And now he's number one motivational speaker in the world. And his life is motivational speaking. And he's just like amazing. He's just like, you know, and I listen to him. And I'm like, yeah, I could do this. And there's another guy named Inky. I don't know his name. He's amazing too. He's grew up in poverty. Had football dreams, was like on his way to the NFL, and in one of the games he got hurt and basically paralyzed.
Ooh.
And lost feeling in one of his arms. Can't use it. But now he's an amazing motivational speaker as well. And so a lot of times I know that our tragedies, our hardships are the pathway to our calling. Mm-hmm.
Well, our trials come to make us strong.
Yeah, of course. They make you strong, but then what do you do with it?
Yeah.
You can't keep it to yourself. It happens so that you can go out and encourage other people.
Yeah.
And so pageantry was my way of encouraging others. And so now that pageantry is done, in a sense, I still want to be able to use my life and my testimony as a way to uplift and support other women. And so I'm just creating that pathway. And then the thing is that it's there. It's pushing past.
Yeah.
The negative thoughts.
Well, yeah, you got to call it. Yeah, the negative thoughts, the self-doubt, the, like, you know, who am I? What do I think I am? Or there may be others out there. Like, there's so many different.
I've done this once and it failed kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I know me and I know that it's going to happen.
Yes.
Regardless.
And that's all that matters.
There is a God. He is alive.
Hallelujah, amen. Hallelujah, amen.
All right.
Well, I feel like we got I learned a lot more about you today.
Oh,
and I feel like the people who are listening are definitely going to be able to take away, you know, so much from this conversation. Because I think it's important to show that, you know, the versatility of women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because when we talk about, you know, working women of color, professional working women, there's always this kind of like tunnel vision where it's like, okay, you go to work and like you're not creative,
right?
And like you're not so many different things. And it's important to show, because I'm like an educator who's also a beauty pageant,
I know, right?
You know, winner, and then she's like an advocate for stillbirth, and she's like all these different things. And it's like you can actually be that versatile while being a, you know, professional working woman. And so it's always amazing to hear like the different stories and to kind of encourage other people who either might be thinking about getting into different areas,
right,
or who might be struggling or suffering with, you know, a particular issue, to hear that there are other women. And I like, you know, having conversations with like real everyday women, not like, I mean, no shade to like, you know, the Beyonce's and all these other like celebrities,
right,
but you know, it's like we really don't know the behind the scenes. Yeah. You know, we're not really in touch. Yeah, exactly.
And you're an average everyday woman, you feel like, oh, I could DM her.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
to say,
find her and ask. You know, and I've had many women, you know, do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and say, oh my gosh, thank you for sharing. You know, and you know, can you tell me where I can get help or something like that?
Yeah,
yeah,
very important.
Yeah, very, very important.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, thank you so much for being a guest on today, you know, on this show.
Thank
like,
you
it's
for
really
having
important.
Me.
Of course. Now, where, you know, if somebody would want to DM you to ask you, you know, questions, or just want to be like, I want to connect because she's so awesome. Whether it be, you know, for stillbirth questions or beauty pageant or even education, whatever, how would we be able to get in contact with you?
So on Instagram, I am Marjorie Vail, MarjorieVail. And on Facebook, I think I'm Marjorie Unglad Vail.
Ah, okay.
Haitian name. And I do have a website that I need to get current. And it's my name, MarjorieVail.com.
All right, cool.
Yes.
So for whatever.
I love helping. So if anyone really like.
Yeah.
I really do.
Reach out. And she actually is genuine. Because sometimes, you know, people will say, yeah, send me a DM. And then when you send it, you're like, I haven't heard from her. Rita, I haven't heard from this person in 3 months.
That breaks my heart, though.
Yeah.
People are like that. When people do that to me, I'm like, but you said you wanted to help.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could definitely DM her. And for whatever reason, if you did not get any of that information, you could slide up into my DMs. Yes.
Well, you know, I'm like the type of, I told Rita, I said, you know, when someone says they want to hang out, I'll be like, so when?
And she was on it too. And I was like, who hurt you? Cause she's like, hey, like she's like, let me know it. I mean, I'm serious, and I'm like, who hurt her?
No, people like to say that, like, oh yeah, we should get together, and you're just like, you never get together,
happened. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, when I want to get to know someone, I'm like.
Yeah.
Oh, what day you have open?
And I always appreciate that. And that's how you know, like, people are mature. Because sometimes, you know, life, I'm one of those people, like, things, I can have my phone out, up, like, in mid-text. And right. then three things pop up. And then it's like, a week later, I'm like, oh, I never sent that text.
Yeah.
And some people will take it so personal. Right. They'll be like, oh, my gosh, you know what, Rita? You know, she never got back. It's like, no, you don't understand. Somebody right. probably called me in mid-text and I thought I sent it. But so it's always good to, like, you know, like that maturity to be like, hey, Rita, hey, so when's a good time for you?
When are you hanging?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I totally appreciate that. It's been really cool so far.
Yeah.
So definitely looking forward to it.
Looking forward to traveling.
Yes. I'm very big with traveling, although my job is trying to ruin my life right now with the PTO days. But you know what? We're going to work around that.
They won't let you be great.
We're going to work around that. Yeah. God is good. And with that being said, it's a wrap, everyone.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned.